That's the best proof of that. Remember the duty to mitigate damage we talked about in contracts? On the policy reasons, we don't want people, once there's liability, to try to run their damages up and really stick it to you. He materially breached his contract? Well, I'll make sure he's going to have to pay me every nickel I can possibly squeeze up. Courts don't want people to do that, because that's going to be, those cases are going to end up in court and they won't settle. Same thing with the breach of a lease. Again, I say breach, a lease is a contract. This happens frequently. Tenant says, I'm out of here. Tenant has a lease. Tenant is only 3 months into their 1 year lease. They get notice, all right. There's no problem with the landlord. But they leave saying, I have to leave. My employer is sending me to Grand Rapids. I have to go to Grand Rapids to keep this job. I can't stay in them. Duty to mitigate damages means that. The landlord must make reasonable efforts to try to re-rent the premises. And can't sit back and say, oh, I know who that employer is in Grand Rapids, and I'm just going to sit back and do nothing and collect 9 months' rent. If he doesn't pay, unless he'll get a judgment and garnish his wages. No. The landlord must make reasonable efforts to try to re-rent the premises. During this interim period before they re-rent the premises, yes, they can collect that rent from the tenant and sue the tenant if the tenant doesn't pay, as well as incurring the incidental damages of the cost to re-rent can be added in to what the tenant has to pay. They still must try to re-rent the premises, and if before the end of that year they've got a new tenant, well then they can't collect from the tenant who breached the lease and moved to Grand Rapids.
So like say if I move to Grand Rapids like you said, and I have a year lease, if I move out and I say, hey, I got this person, here's all his, you know, and they walk in and they show all this stuff, take over my lease, and they just say, no, we don't want to deal with, you know, changing things, you just got to pay us the money, so they can't do that.
Okay, then the question becomes is, are they violating their duty to mitigate damages because they won't accept a substitute tenant? I would say you win if that tenant's not a criminal or has a decent credit rating. Okay, if that tenant's got a 200 credit rating and six pending felonies against them,
probably
they
not.
Landlord wins. Okay. They don't have to let whoever, whatever bum you grab off the street and bring in. But if it's somebody that reasonably appears to be someone that can fulfill the rental obligations, they would be violating their duty to mitigate damages by not accepting that person. But I want to make sure that you were aware of that. Okay, that brings us back. I want to go with adverse possession unless there's questions on easements. Don't confuse easement with adverse possession, as some students do. Even though there's a 15-year rule for adverse possession, too, they're different.
Adverse possession means that you have acquired a portion of your neighbor's property because of what has happened for 15 continuous years.
So let's say we don't really know where the boundary line is. There are no natural monuments around anymore. There's no stakes anymore. There's no fence up there. But you can prove that for 15, now this is hard to prove because it's not just 15. It's 15 continuous, exclusive, not shared with the owner. You're not planting flowers together with the owner of the property on this trip. You're exclusively occupying it, continuous and hostile. Meaning that if somebody tried to stop you from using it during the 15 years, you stopped them from stopping you. You ejected them from trying to get you off that land. That's the hostile part. So it's continuous, exclusive, hostile, 15 years. I know this sounds tacky, but tacking applies to this too. I'm not getting any last time. Okay. So you did it for 12. The person who occupied your property did the exact same thing for at least three before you. You've got your 15, but you've got the burden of proof in a court of equity to show that that's happened, that you can establish that. How do you establish it again? The neighbors. Neighbors. They know. People are nosy. People look out their windows. People know what's going on around them. And the same thing again with title insurance. Title insurance won't tell you anything about whether anybody has got an equitable claim for adverse possession. An equitable claim means you just got a claim. You got a right in that and convert that into a legal judgment, so now you've got the legal interest. You've got to go out there and you've got to inspect those borderlines and probably talk to the neighbors and see and get your legal description. If there hasn't been a, if you're not going to have a survey done with respect to the sale, surveys are expensive, you're going to rely on an old survey. Well, get that old survey and have somebody out there who knows how to read the damn thing. Not everybody can, the meets and bounds and all that stuff. And see if, in fact, the boundaries that the parties are honoring are, in fact, the actual boundaries on the survey. Because if they're not, somebody may have an adverse possession claim on it.
So I have a vacant lot that is next to my home that I've been mowing a couple passes on. So, in keeping it upkeep.
You're the only person that's used it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long?
It's only been a couple years. I'm not even going to try to take it. But presumably, 15 years go by. It's been since 2004. So 15 years go by, and I could go say, that's my land now.
Betcha. And if he won't agree, you can go on a circuit court and file an equitable action.
That's ridiculous, but all right.
Now, his argument is, well, why don't you go down and have it changed with the tax so that he's being taxed on all that property? He's sitting back and letting me pay the taxes on it for 15 years, and now he wants to claim he owns it by adverse possession. That's the way it goes. Stuff rocks.
Yeah.
And then he's got a 43 by 100 foot unbuildable lot. Okay.
And I'm sure that adverse possession is going to be one of those terms in a legal will of fortune. It's going to be on the list, at least. And we may not get to it, but it'll be on the list. One of your 14 final exam essay questions is tell me everything you can about adverse possession. And that's what I want you to do on each. You'll see something like adverse possession, or you might see liquidated damages clause, or whatever it is. Just tell me everything you can about it. Lawrence, do you have a question?
All I said was, yeah, remember that we'll probably get to it because I'm in the semifinals.
Another interesting property. License. Common law term. Licenses mean somebody gave you permission to be on your property. You don't have 15 years of adverse exclusive hostile possession. You might be operating a lemonade stand on somebody else's property. Or you may allow them to pitch their tent in your bed. You may have a very large lot and you're nice to your neighbors. And your neighbors don't have a good sized lot. And you let them, the kids come and pitch tents and this, that, and everything. License is revocable at any time. Nobody, on the basis of a license, since a license is just permission to come out of the property, it's not exclusively occupying anything. It's just permission to be on the property, and that's revocable at any time. The mall that may allow people to come in and, you know, in sort of the passageways in the mall, so they might have a little stand up, that's a license.
Unless
they gave those people a lease, which I
doubt. Back to on the adverse possession. If my neighbor were to come out and say, hey, you have my permission to mow my yard, does that, because I now have his permission, is no longer hostile and I no longer have a claim?
That's a question of fact for the judge. Of course, there's no jury in the next election. Question of fact for the judge. If your response was, I'll go ahead and mow it, but it's my property now, I think that can establish the hostility.
Okay.
But yet you don't want to tip your hand until you know you got your 15 years. So what I would recommend that you do, as soon as you got your 15 years and you want to take it, notify them of that and notify them that you want their permission to go down and have the legal description changed so you can be fully taxed on the part of the property that you acquired. I had one adverse possession lawsuit in my career, and I think it was over 20 years ago. We banged our heads against the wall, and these are neighbors that aren't getting along, and the judge issued his opinion and split it. Neither side was happy. I'm not going to do another one of these. I've never done another one. I mean, if you're going to stay living next to somebody, you need to settle that problem. You can't have a situation where you're hating each other and you're trying to set each other up because they're going to have worse problems than that. And so you sit down, you talk about it, and you settle it. That's really what you do. Ask me if you ever have a problem with a car dealership. I'd love to have time to talk about this tonight. And ask me what my remedy is for that. Short of a lawsuit. Well, there's another way that I think works better than a lawsuit. So that we go to one. All right. It's called Dunn's Publicity Method. We'll talk about that later if you want. Profits. I give you all but three lines on profits on page 11. Mineral rights. You can separate mineral rights from your land if you want. When you give that oil company, let's say there may be land on Lucas's big land on Lucas's oil under the ground in Lucas's vacant lot. Lucas can enter into a lease with the oil company. By doing that, he grants them a license to be on his property. And probably an easement to get to the part where they're drilling, as well as a license for them to be on the property. Those are mineral rights referred to in the book as profits. And they can be separated. You can sell your land, or you can grant a life estate, whatever it is, and reserve your mineral rights. You can do that. You can say, I'll sell you my land, but I'm not selling you my mineral rights, because if I'm going to get $1 million lease out of this deal, because they strike oil, that purchase price would have been a whole hell of a lot different than the purchase price you and I have agreed to. So, yeah, I mean, you can have it now for the price that just the land is worth, but I want to retain the mineral rights. That can be drawn up. Lien. We talked about liens before. Top 1167 talks about tax liens, judgment liens, mechanic liens. Just like an adverse possession claim, a lien is an equitable interest in property. Equitable interest in property means you've got a claim which you could bring to a circuit judge who has equitable authority, and that could ripen into ownership of the property, or converting the property to cash proceeds in a sale to pay your claim. Adverse possession, until a judge recognizes it in a lawsuit, is just an equitable claim. And so are liens. So tax, IRS, well, you never want to be in that situation. Judgment or mechanics liens. Judgment liens. Somebody, you got a civil judgment against them for $60,000 and they don't want to pay any of the money. And so you go back to the circuit court and say, Judge, I want you to grant me a lien in his real estate so I can get my judgment paid. And that judge has the authority to grant you that lien. Remember, we were talking before about writs of attachment, the ways to collect judgments a couple weeks back. That's what we're talking about here. Divorce case, judgment lien. I was talking to one of my divorce clients today, and her ex-husband didn't pay her the money. So I got to drag him back in and get a judgment lien in his real estate so I can get that money. Mechanics lien, Michigan statute. Not responsible for this on the test, it won't be on the test. There's a whole procedure, there's forms that have to be filed at the county clerk's office. If you are an automobile repair facility, you are, as far as automobiles, that's personal property. But more likely a building contractor. And you have your materials and your labor and the real estate, you haven't been paid. You've got like 45 days, I think it is, from the time you stop working to file that at the clerk's office, the proper forms. You then get a lien, which is an equitable interest, which you can convert to legal interest in circuit court by having property sold. Fixtures, page 1167, as our marathon continues. Anything that loses its character as personal property that is now attached to the real estate to the extent that by trying to remove it, you've damaged something, is a fixture and is part of the real estate. So that furnace, once it gets set up, is a fixture and part of the real estate. Any other buildings, outbuildings that are built on the property or become fixtures part of the property. Anything that's built into the ground, attached to cables, all fixtures. And you can't say, well, I'm going to move out and I'm going to take my stuff with me, the stuff that I attach to the ground. No. Something that you plug into the wall, not a fixture. You just unplug it.
What about, like, kitchen cabinets and
fixtures.
Those are fixtures.
If it's portable and movable at the time that you're leaving, then it's a fixture. Then it's not a fixture. It's personal because it hasn't lost its character. It's personal. Just like somebody that puts something in a car, he can't yank it out of that car if he doesn't get paid because it's part of the car now. You have to own the car to be able to do that. But the automobile repair facilities have the same procedure for mechanic liens as the building contractors do. It's just it's for personal property. It's not for real estate. It's a separate statute.
So those sheds you can buy at Lowe's are just, you set them on the ground, you can pretty much get seven guys and just pick it up and put it in the back of a truck. That's not an attachment.
It's not attached into the ground. If it's resting on top of the ground, it's not a fixture.
All right.
If it's plugged into the wall, it's not a fixture.
So that's one way how those real estate agents can get you when they say, oh, wow, they're going to leave this water heater here for you, and you're really lucking out because they cost so much now to replace.
That water heater is a fixture. It's not just plugged into the electrical outlet.
It's one of the best ways for them to sell.
It's hooked up to the, probably hooked up to the furnace. I haven't gone down and looked at mine lately. I'm not very mechanical. From a lot of other things, I'm not very mechanical. Tort liability is discussed again on page 1171. Well, we cover that when we cover torts, right? One rule for business invitees. One rule for social guests. No duty owed to trespassers. Except the duty not to commit a crime or an intentional tort against them. So I need to go over that again. When we review next week, we'll come back to that.
I have a question, actually. I have a question about that. I remember hearing a case, I don't know what state it was in, but...
That issue might come up in our case, too.
There was a burglar on top of the house, fell through a skylight onto the kitchen counter or something, got stabbed by a knife.
He's
a
trespass, right? Burglar, can we agree?
But the burglar sued the lady and won.
People do all kinds of crazy shit.
But how was that possible that he won that case if he was trespassing and fell through?
Argument would be in maintenance of the condition of the property, which here could be the argument, was so dangerously maintained that even a trespasser wouldn't have been put on fair notice in advance prior to trespassing how dangerous it was, and he didn't have a reasonable opportunity to make an intelligent decision not to go there. Like I say, I can always weigh in and make an argument. Now, does that argument sound very compelling?
Because it was a skylight.
No duty owed to a trespasser. If she shot him, she's committed an intentional tort against him. Can't do that. Prosecutor will charge you, too. Can't use a lethal force to protect against property only. Dick and I come to law classes, and we'll find out more about that. But no duty owed to the trespasser. We're studying common law rules here. That other state, I don't know, they may have some goofy statute in that state that may actually permit them to do that.
I was pretty sure it's either Michigan, Indiana, or Ohio. It's one of those.
Well, that sausage is not going to last too long unless that judge has
the
judge has a nervous breakdown, probably. That's about what
the burglar won, though. That was the crazy one.
I'm sure he didn't win. I'm absolutely sure. Okay. So anyway, that tort liability is revisited again on 1171. We'll talk about that again next week when we do the review. Condominiums. Page 1172. I had to subject myself to one of those timeshare sales deals when I was in Hawaii last week.
Oh.
Why? Because I got $100 off on the luau.
Yeah.
And I got $75 off on the boat cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Money don't buy everything, that's true. But what it don't, I can't use, give me money. Money. That's what I want.
Hey, all you gotta do is listen to someone.
I'm in a strange mood tonight, I'm sorry. And I'll sit and listen to the BS, for an hour and a half, but turn into 2 hours.
Was it the you're joining a party type organization, or are you buying land down there?
I have a divorce client, a very big divorce case in Bay County that
owns a timeshare
in Kauai, and he didn't want to use it this year because his family had dumped him, basically. It was terrible. It's terrible. His wife did turn the children against him. And because I had to fight like hell, ran up a big bill. So that's one of the ways we pay off the bill, so I get to use it. Last week. Sorry I couldn't be here.
That's awesome.
Please don't tell us. I mean, I'm able to do that. So condominium is a timeshare, but it's a timeshare is kind of is like a limited use of a condominium. What do you own? Anybody here have a condo? What do you own when you own a condominium? Anybody happen to know?
Time.
This would be a great Lego wheel fortune. Let's see. That's what you own. When you own a condominium. Anybody want to play? We'll break the lecture mode here for a few minutes. Hey.
Let's see.
Oh.
Hmm?
Oh.
Oh? You can all play collectively. It doesn't have to be Lawrence against Lucas.
The
deck.
The D.
I never realized how tiring this game is for me. Remember, T. Three words on that
T.
Who else? T?
Yeah.
F. R. First one that blurts it out is the winner.
What's the game?
No R. Samantha does this a whole lot better than I do. A lot better looking than I do. L. What's the next word?
L.
O.
L.
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 Okay.
A. I. I had a long day today.
L. The word T. Someone's how does that help me?
This joke?
It's crazy.
L.
What?
I
don't know.
L. He took it out.
Two L's down here. Who's next?
That's it.
One. N. No N.
W.
Huh?
Let's see.
No idea.
I know what the last word is.
That's only because you had your backup.
You got it.
B.
Can
we do B?
Oh, he knows this now. He's like, oh, I got this. E.
Cube of space and half. Cube of space and half of the wall.
What's that?
Cube of space and half of the wall.
You have a cube of space and half of a wall. The person next to you has the other half of the wall. That's what you have. You have nothing other outer grounds and landscaping or any responsibility. You just all in that cube of space and half of that wall.
We said N and you would put N up there for and
probably perfect. Instructor in anyway, that's what you have with a condo. The problem with a condominium is it's condition. You have a big condition on it. You have to be agreeable to be a member of the homeowners association. And you have all kinds of restrictions you have to agree by contract before you can even purchase the condominium. And some of these things, I've even seen condominium owners' restrictions that said you can't have plants on your porch. No, can't have plants on your porch. You can't do this, you can't do that. You can't take a shower, you can't sunbathe, you can't, this would be ridiculous. You can't have anybody over. Right?
You want to grow them inside under
life. Before you buy a condominium, please look at homeowners' association's agreement that they're going to make you sign and close and over and make sure it's something that you actually can live with your lifestyle. Okay, deeds are 1174. We already talked about that. And there's a sample form on 1175. Michigan's deeds look substantially similar to this. I don't like to use all of that legal deeds. Party the first part, signs the party the second part. Used to go out with the party at the third part, the leaps and the bounds, party at the seventh part. No, I like to use plain English. So if you're going to have something legal, you don't know, have it done in plain English. There's nothing that says you can't prepare a deed. From title insurance companies do prepare deeds, and they're not lawyers, they're just forms. But if somebody who's not a lawyer prepared a deed and they want you to sign it, I wouldn't sign it unless you show it to a lawyer to make sure that everything is done properly. And be very careful about that legal description. You can see, looking at this legal description, one word wrong. If it's supposed to say west and it says east, guess what? You haven't bought anything because that parcel doesn't exist. The parcel that exists is a parcel whose legal description is correctly and accurately stated. So you should, and that's what we do in our office. We double and triple check once we've typed up a legal description to make sure it fits with the real legal description of the property. If you make a mistake, you're going to have a hell of a time. You're going to have to go into circuit court, the court of equity, try to get it straightened out, and you're going to have a hell of a time. Okay, recording of deeds. I've heard this. Well, yeah, we have a deed from Uncle Joe, but we didn't record it. No, we don't want anybody to know about it, so we have it in a bedroom drawer, you know, like a hotel room drawer where Tony, in San Francisco, where Tony Bennett's heart supposedly is. You can't do that. Deed is a transfer of property at the time the documents are executed and handed over. If there's never been a delivery to the grantee, and the grantee then dies, and somebody finds this deed in a closet somewhere, it has no legal effect because it wasn't delivered to the grantee. It's the delivery of the deed to the grantee that transfers interest in property. In common law, they used to have a ceremony. It was called a feoffment. You don't need to write this down. F-E-O-F-F-M-E-N-T. Take any spell that. And you had two swords. The grantor had a sword, the grantee had a sword. And when the tips of the two swords met, that's when the property was transferred. Well, in Michigan, it's when the deed is transferred.
That would be awesome.
But if you want to do it with swords, just let the title insurance company know.
That's what I am doing.
Warranties, 1177 and 1178.
This is mine.
I'm not, the warranties that we're going to be dealing with are warranties in contract situations, not in real estate. But anytime you convey property for sale in Michigan, you give a warranty of title. That means that if it turns out that somehow the title insurance company screwed it up, and you don't really have title, you can be sued for breach of warranty of title. Well, and so can the title insurance company can be sued for what? Negligence. Okay. In issuing the policy, even though their seller doesn't have marketable title. And again, in marketable title in Michigan means that the seller had a clear chain of title for 45, 30 years. Okay. Covenant of season. Covenant of quiet enjoyment. That's one of the landlord's covenants to the tenant. Covenant of quiet enjoyment. And that's what I meant. The landlord has the right to peaceable use and enjoyment of the premises, and the landlord has an obligation not to violate that. Okay. Eminent domain, page 1178. Hit for each indigenous. Back to my favorite subject again, the United States Constitution. American government class, we spend about the first third of this just on there. Eminent domain means the federal government can steal your property from you. Exactly what it means. Before the adoption of the Constitution, England reserved the right to quarter their troops in the colonists' homes anytime. So you could have your house there in Massachusetts in the old colonial period, and the next thing you know, a couple of British troops could park their horses out front, come in, and start living in your house. And ultimately, they could even take the house for payment of taxes. And of course, England was always taxing us more and more and more because they couldn't stop the wars with France they were having in constantly. And so the adoption of the Constitution, and of course the Fifth Amendment was in the Bill of Rights, which came after the adoption of the Constitution, but not long thereafter. We wanted to put something in there that preserved the sanctity of a person's right to have title and real estate without the government taking it over. And so we have a provision in the Fifth Amendment that says the government can't take your property unless they pay you fair market value for the property, and they intend to use the property for public use and benefit. So they can't take the property that has to erect a 1,000-foot-tall monument to Barack Obama. They can take their property if they can show it's needed for irrigation and wetlands and some environmental, very important environmental reason. Government's got to justify it that it's public use and benefit.
How is the wetlands public benefit?
That's the government's burden. They have to prove that we need this for some substantial public benefit in the way in which we're going to use this property. And so as long as they pay a reasonable price, you can't say no. You can't say no. This property's been in my family line for 50 years or 150 years or 200 years. I know of a case I was watching on TV. This guy in Los Angeles, and states, by the way, reserved the right to do this in their constitutions. Michigan reserved the right to do this in their constitution. That's why we ended up with a Freeland prison. Mr. Willards, the farmer that owned that property, did not want to sell. He did not want to put, he didn't want to be the cause of having a prison in Freeland, and he wanted to keep that property. And the state of Michigan said no. And the Governor Engler wanted to have a prison on that property. It was a long battle, and finally it got settled. And there was a case out in Los Angeles. This guy operated a popular restaurant. Now, wasn't he? You know, it wasn't any fine dining place, but he did good business, it was popular, everybody liked it, he was busy all the time, and the city of Los Angeles decided he wanted to have a parking lot there. Well, cities are political subdivisions of the state. Cities derive their power from the state only if the state will grant them the authority, and the state do grant the cities that will build the authority. And the city of Los Angeles says, we don't have enough parking lot space in this area, we really need a parking lot. So, guy, this is, I know this restaurant is your whole life, it's popular, and this is the only thing you do, but you're out of here. Here's your check. He lost. He's gone. He is terrible. Terrible. If they ever try to take my property, they're going to have a hell of a lot of bad ones. And I'm going to make it very, very unreasonable.
Is it eminent domain that gives the city or the state or whatever the right to come in and plant a tree between the sidewalk and the curb, or what?
No. Eminent domain means they're taking the property, the whole property.
So what is it that gives them the right to plant that?
Because in the city, the outlawn area between the sidewalk and the street, you basically share with the city. It's not yours. Yeah. You own it conjointly with the city. The city can enact reasonable regulations. They don't like the way you cut your tree. I got a tree in my outlawn. They don't like the way I'm cutting those branches. They can come in and cut them down for me without asking me.
Well, they won't let us cut some trees that are just rotting away.
You don't shovel the sidewalk, they can shovel the sidewalk and send you a bill for it. Yeah. You know, things like that.
If they take your property, though, don't they have to offer you a reasonable amount?
That's what I say. Reasonable, fair compensation. But I still call it stealing. I still call it stealing because they can take it, whether you want them to take it or not. They can still take it. But if they're not offering fair compensation, you can go into federal district court, which here would be Bay City, and challenge. You can also challenge their proposed use of the properties not being for public use and benefit. In federal court, you can have a trial. Mr. Willard's, I think, did go to trial on that matter. In Freeland, and of course the state one, and now we have the Freeland prison, where several of my clients are presently living. So I guess I benefit from
fair compensation. How far does that go? Do they justify?
Well, you bring in some people, bring in appraisers.
Because the bottom fell out of the economy, but you've been living there for X amount of years. You're like, well.
A property is worth what a buyer, ready, willing, and able buyer is willing to pay right now. Not 20 years ago, right now. And of course, we all know what happened to the real estate market. Mortgages, page 1180, 1181. Security against risk granted by consent and by contract. By you, who's the mortgagee, who's the company, who's the mortgagor. It's a security interest. Same kind of interest that Ford Motor Credit may have if you're financing a Ford. They have what's called a security interest. In real estate, we call it a mortgage. Security interest is another one of those things called an equitable interest that can eventually ripen into legal ownership if you default on it and there's a foreclosure. So by contract, you're saying, bank, if I don't make my clients pay payments, you can take this property and sell it and apply it to my debt. That's called a foreclosure. A redemption is what you have in your contract. That says, even if there is a foreclosure, you've got 6 months after the foreclosure sale to redeem, match that sale price. It's a redemption. You got a little extra time to get your financing. You can have two mortgages on the same property, but they're not equal. You have a junior mortgage, you have a junior lien holder, the mortgage is a lien, and you have a senior lien holder. The one that the senior lien holder has preference. The senior lien holder can say, junior lien holder, you're out of here. Gone, get out of here. I'm paying you what you're owed, which is all they want. You're out of here because we don't want another mortgage. We want to be the only mortgage. And of course, if the senior lien holder does that, then they roll that money right into the mortgage balance, of course. They can do that.
If they don't buy out that junior lien holder and that property transfers title, does the junior lien holder still have an equitable interest in the property?
They do, but they're going to be out of here because if there's a foreclosure, the senior lien holder gets to be paid first because they're senior. It's a race in time.
So the senior lien holder at that point will have title to the comfort of the land, but there's still a lien on it.
Yeah, it's a very important thing to remember about mortgages and also about security interests in automobiles and automobile financing as well. This term applies to both. That subject is covered in business law too. And that's also part of the Uniform Commercial Code, Article 9 of the Uniform Commercial Code, security interest in personal property. Perfection of that mortgage, which only happens by a central filing registered deeds. If that mortgage is not perfected by being filed at the register of deeds, it loses its legal priority. If another mortgage came in and got filed ahead of time and beat them to the with a race in time, here's the other problem for the mortgage company, and something that's going to get somebody fired for sure if this happens. The mortgage didn't get perfected, it didn't get filed at the register of deeds, and it got found bankruptcy. Well, if the bankruptcy trustee beats the filing of the mortgage, they got priority to the property. The bankruptcy court now is in control of the property. And they're screwed with that mortgage, because instead of being a secured creditor, which gives them special status in bankruptcy, but that they're a secured creditor with a perfected security interest in the property, they get their security despite the bankruptcy. They won't get any money in addition to that, but they'll at least get their property to sell. If they're not perfected, now they become an unsecured creditor, and they have to stand in line with all the other unsecured creditors and hope to get something out of the bankruptcy. And the bankruptcy laws are fairly liberal to the extent that the debtor gets to keep a lot of assets, despite being in bankruptcy, called exemptions. The debtor gets to keep 36. Husband and wife together get to keep like $36,000 or $38,000 of equity in their house. That's exempt.
So you charge a bunch of stuff on a credit card, run it up to $28,000, file bankruptcy.
Bad thing filing, bankruptcy court for you. It's a bad thing filing. Can't do that. The other thing you can't do is within 90 days before filing bankruptcy, pick and choose which creditors are you going to pay off. Say, well, I don't want to file bankruptcy on them. That's my father-in-law. It'll be embarrassing. Well, pay him off, and then I'll file bankruptcy on the rest. No. Because if you do that, you can't. You don't file bankruptcy on somebody or something. If you file bankruptcy, you have to list a complete and truthful statement of your financial affairs. You can't leave anything out. Everybody's affected. And if you pay somebody off within 90 days before you file, that's called a preferential payment. The bankruptcy trustee will come swooping in like the sword of Damocles and pounce on that and get that money back and capture it back into the bankrupt estate and order that person that you paid or that company that you paid to repay it back. Not in the book, but important, I think, zoning. Local communities have the right, to some extent, to regulate how you use your property. And it's a balancing act between the right of the community to try to preserve property values and have compatible uses together in certain parts of the area and not incompatible uses. That has to be balanced against a person's right under the Constitution to be able to freely enjoy peaceably the use of the property without government control. So it's a balance. We all can agree that we want property values to be maintained. So it's a balancing of personal and community interests. You don't want the person next door to you to paint their house pink. You don't want that to happen. You don't want a factory to move next down the street. And so the city can say, we want to keep industrial over here, we want to keep heavy commercial here, some light commercial here, and we'll have some mixed residential commercial. Like this area. We have a little shopping area at Sweden Wheeler. Sweden Wheeler, but it's really in a residential area. Or at Jefferson and Sucknet, you've got a few businesses there. Got Lalonde's, a drugstore, 7-Eleven, but that's a residential area. Some commercial areas would change the character of the residential area and cause it to go down. Others wouldn't. Depends upon the nature of the business and how it's going to be used. So we go through this. The city will have a committee, the zoning board, and you can challenge the zoning board in court if you believe that it is an unreasonable interference with your right to peaceably use and enjoy your property, and that this zoning regulation doesn't really serve the community interests.
Now, zoning is what's going on with the whole medical marijuana shop opening up in Bay City, or is that not?
Well, there's more than just that. That's part of it, but it's also because that statute's very ambiguous, and there's holes in the language of that statute, and it's very difficult for people to know exactly how to interpret it. So you've got that going on, court decisions trying to interpret it, and then you got the zoning in a lot of areas trying to keep it up. I had a client of mine that called me and was going to, in Bay County, was going to rent to some people who wanted to have a medical marijuana. I told them don't do it because it's too much uncertainty right now. There's too many holes in the statute. We have, who knows what, how the courts are going to interpret that. And what you might end up doing, what might end up happening is the police might raid it, and the next thing we know, it's going to be forfeited because if a building is being used for drug trafficking, we have criminal forfeiture statutes that allow the police to come in and seize it and have it forfeited. You really want to risk all this? You mean to tell me you can't find somebody else, something else that you have? You said, I haven't been able to rent this building up, and they want to come in. So, talk to that guy, you better be careful about what you're going
to
do here.
The next thing also, so is that also to do with all the mosques that people are fighting?
What's that?
Like mosques, a lot of mosques are now around the United States are trying to move in and build giant mosque centers and religious centers for the Islamic community, and all the communities are saying,
yeah. That's a First Amendment issue, too. The right to be able to... Right to be able to practice your religion, free exercise clause in the First Amendment, as opposed to the community's interest. And if you're going to challenge that, you've got to be able to show what the harm is. Not just that you don't want Muslims around. That isn't going to be valid. That isn't going to work. But if they're having their loud speaker horns and their public prayers at 4 o'clock in the morning and you work second shift, it's waking you up every morning, now you might have an argument.
So who would win?
That's where the balancing comes in. Can we regulate the use in such a way as to protect both the personal interest and the community interest? And can we find kind of a balance there that everybody can live with?
So who would win in zoning? With the mosque, who would win zoning or the...
I know there was a controversy about one in Saginaw Township.
So, like, if all Saginaw Township or 90% of Saginaw Township signs a piece of paper saying they don't want it in the community?
No, that's why we have a constitution. To protect the few from the tyranny of the many. We can't just let it be 90 against 10 because it's a constitutional right. And the government can't say that the practice of a particular religion is unacceptable because that violates the free exercise clause of the First Amendment. Like if the way you practice your religion hurts other people, that can be regulated. And if it can be established that this mosque is a front for terrorist activities, and how do you establish that? The police aren't interested. Hire a private investigator and have them penetrate. See what goes on inside there. If that happens, then now you've got something. Which leads me to the last thing we're going to talk about. And that's what questions about nuisance. If the way your neighbor is operating using their real estate prevents you from being able to peacefully, safely use your property, then we have what's called a private nuisance. And you can file an equitable action in the circuit court to try to eliminate that. That's called the abatement of the nuisance. You order the judge to end. These people are blasting loud rock music all night long. Can't sleep at night. We believe it's a drug house. We got people coming in and out of there all night, making all kinds of racket. They have lots of animals in this house. And these animals are drawing lots of horse flies that are coming into our house. So it's a matter of public health, safety, and being able to actually live in your house. You can't because of what these people are doing you can go in and ask the judge to enter an order of abatement of the nuisance, cease and desist, whatever it is that's causing the problem, and then, of course, you get your order, and they violate it, and what do?
Call the cops.
Here we go again. Come on, you should know this. How do you enforce an equitable order? By going back to the circuit judge. Show cause action, right? Judge, enter an order requiring this person, which I'll personally serve on, because I don't personally serve him. I don't personally serve him that you can't put him in jail for violating it. Because he has to have proper notice under the Constitution. Enter an order requiring this person to come before you and show cause why he should not be held in contempt of court because he's violated your order. Show cause action. How do you violate it? That's how you enforce your equitable actions. Equitable orders. Equitable orders. Judge has already signed the order, but the guy disobeyed it. Now, private nuisances can actually get bigger in scope and affect the whole community. Then, it's not just you that's being affected by it, but it's many others, and that's called a public nuisance. And if that happens, who brings the action? The city or township attorney, on behalf of everybody similarly situated. We got a drug house, we got a prostitution house, we got to get it out of our community. Or we got, you know, we got a building here that's got, it's vacant, it's got all these rats coming in on there, big rats, garbage piling up, people coming in and using it for periods of time and leaving the public nuisance, the blight in our community. Property can so, hold on just a second, I want to get back to that, can so deteriorate along those lines, it's not safe for the building to even be standing anymore. It's so unsafe. Possibly because there's all kinds of crime in there, all kinds of rats in there. The building may be ready to crumble, structurally unsound, it's unsafe. That's called a condemnation, where the city comes in or the township comes in and enters an order. And the owner of the property has due process rights under the Fifth Amendment. Due process rights means you have the right to a fair hearing, the right to be heard by an impartial magistrate to say your piece. But if the judge orders a condemnation, then a wrecking ball comes in. It gets leveled. And guess who can be ordered to pay for that? The owner of the property. If you can find them and collect the money from them. Otherwise, it's the city's expense. We had two hands, but I think Mike's was first.
Well, I was just going to ask you, in the example of the drug house or a prostitution house or something, you know what is going on over there. There's been no arrest. There's been no. I mean, doesn't there have to be? They got to have some right. Don't they? The people that are in there. I mean, doesn't have to be arrested.
They have due process rights to come and challenge the effort of the city. Has to give them notice. You're hereby notified that we're going to seek an order of condemnation before the city council sets up this date. You have the right to then take that matter to the judge.
But the city can't come into your house, can they, or come to you and say, we think you're selling drugs out of your house, you need to stop or we're going to throw you out of the house or we're going to take the house.
They can send a letter saying we're going to take action if it doesn't stop.
And if I say, prove it,
well,
are you? I mean, that's what you mean.
Condemnation's a pretty extreme remedy, but they could just try a nuisance action and get you to cease and desist from this, and then the matter goes in front of the circuit judge. They can't prove it. Told me that real estate isn't necessarily part of Business Law 1, but I wanted it because how important it is, and I don't know who teaches the Business Law 2, and I just wanted to make sure that you have this information, because I think it's pretty important. That's all the material. Oh, Jacob Eastman has a question.
You're bringing these nuisance or suits against your neighbors. Is your ability to do it anonymously? I know you mentioned using
the city and try to get a public nuisance action. Yeah, you can do that.
That would be how you
would go about it. But if they challenge it, the police don't need witnesses, right?
Right.
They may be able to come up with another witness. Colleen. What's that? Landlord-tenant isn't covered in 49. It's mostly Michigan law. So it's just what I call it.
Okay.
And real estate is chapter 49. there are some problems in Chapter 49, but doing the first credit score.